Welcome to Sunday Morning, a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. An old friend is back with me, a psychotherapist, and you're the head of the AFSP, which you're going to tell us what that is. But Jason Tompkins with us again this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mimi. Thank you for having us back.
You're welcome. I'm glad to have you back. You're always a pleasure. We had just talked to the guys from the Crisis Center about World Suicide Prevention Day, which was September 10th. You know Tom Mueller.
Right. Tom and I have worked together on our International Survivors of Suicide Loss programs in the past.
Okay. And I know that if people are having trouble, we've talked about phone numbers in your organization before, but the first thing that we can say, I have a lot of respect for the Crisis Center. 211, I didn't know that until really I met you guys, you and Tom Mueller.
Right. That phone number, people can either dial 211 or they can dial 1-800-273-TALK. That's 1-800-273-8255. And they'll be connected with someone who's trained to help someone in a mental health crisis to talk them through that.
One of the things that we talked about is that it is so valuable in any circumstance to be able to talk to somebody who's been through the exact same circumstance you have. You and I have talked about that before. Let's talk about that in the sense of suicide and people who've attempted suicide and who have completed their suicide.
Exactly. That's such an important thing. The American Foundation for Suicide Prevention has every year something called the International Survivors of Suicide Loss Program. And that's an opportunity for people who've been grieved by suicide to not only come and hear other people's stories of loss and grief and hope, but also to be able to share their stories. And here in Tampa Bay, that's going to be on November the 21st this year.
And where is it?
We're going to have two locations. I'm so excited about the growth in our chapter over the past year. We have two of those programs. One is going to be at Suncoast Hospice on Roosevelt Boulevard in Clearwater, and the other one's going to be on the ninth floor of the Vaughn Center at the University of Tampa.
On the same day?
On the same day, roughly around the same time.
Oh, awesome. Is there any coincidence to the fact that that's around the holidays?
You know, a lot of people ask us that because there's, I think, some people commonly think that there's an increase in suicides around this time.
Is there not?
And what our statistics show us, it's more often in the spring.
Wow.
I'm not really sure what the story is or the research shows behind that, but there's a higher prevalence of that. International Survivors of Suicide Loss Day actually got started about 10 years ago. It was an act of Congress, and it's always placed the Saturday before Thanksgiving.
I see. And did they have any reasoning for doing that, or was that just the day they picked?
The congressman who passed it had a son who died by suicide.
I see.
And he wanted to pick a day that was significant, and the Saturday before Thanksgiving for suicide survivors can be a difficult time because we're planning the holidays, we're thinking about our families, and we also remember who's not there.
Right.
The other area that AFSP has been interested in and researching more has been suicide attempt survivors. And at our national conference recently, I had a chance to listen to a panel of suicide attempt survivors tell their story, and they're so eager to get involved and help other people. It's such a passionate story. The people who shared in Atlanta were.
Right.
And it's really an untapped resource because we get to know what happens in the mind of a person in that moment.
Right.
And there's a growing interest in that. We had a roundtable discussion earlier this year in Jacksonville with several attempt survivors. It was very useful.
And what did you find out? What are you finding out about where they are when they come to that point? I can only imagine how down you have to be to think that that's the only choice.
Well, one of the things that we do know, and I'll acknowledge there's a lot of things that we don't know, but one of the things we do know is that suicide is the outcome of an illness. Just like people die from cancer, people die from heart attacks, people die from mental illness. And 90% of the people who die by suicide 90% of people who die by suicide have a diagnosable mental illness at the time of their death.
I see.
And so certainly environmental factors, biological factors, social factors all contribute to that pie, if you will. But the largest section is mental health. And we found that if we can reach out to someone quickly who's in that crisis, that we can more often than not help them find hope and save their life.
We've talked about this before, the stigma that goes against getting help for mental health issues. And in fact, I think we were talking to Tom Mueller about this, that I can remember years ago, and this was, I think, in the 60s or 70s, when somebody was running as a vice presidential candidate, one of the Shriver family members, and they basically just the fact that he had been treated and the fact that and he wasn't in a depressive episode at all or hadn't had any for years, but just the idea that he had been treated at one point for depression knocked him out of the race.
Well, that's one of the big goals that we have for each one of our events. It's so important to feel safe to talk about these things, and people do feel shameful. I'm a psychotherapist in private practice, and sometimes people come to see me in the aftermath of a suicide, and one of the things that most everyone deals with is how do I tell people? Because they're concerned about their own reaction, but they're also concerned about the other person's reaction. And if they say something condemning or shameful, that makes the person's grief all that much more difficult.
Sure.
And so our Out of the Darkness community walks, we plan on having 400 at the Tampa and the St. Petersburg location this year. And we're already registered at 300, so we're well on our track. But when you have a group that large, that many people who've all experienced this from one side of the coin or the other, there's not a stigma there because it becomes comfortable and acceptable to say the word suicide and to hear and listen to somebody's story.
So you say that you're able to get to people at the baseline. Is that the people that call 211, or are you even talking about getting them before that even they get to that point?
Well, when I say get to people, I'm talking about the amount of resources that are available to anyone along the spectrum. Certainly the crisis hotline's available for folks to call in when they're in crisis. Mm-hmm. And the crisis hotline is also available before someone's in that immediate crisis.
Right.
Because we don't want to wait until someone's sitting there with means to end their life in their hand.
Exactly.
Certainly we want to be available to them, but if there's resources before then, then we want to be able to reach out to folks then as well.
How do you get people those resources? How do you even let them know that they're out there? Because I think still there is a lack of communication, if that's the word for it, as to those valuable resources that we do have in the community.
Well, I think one of the things is, as you've talked about already, the stigma and making it more comfortable to say these words and making it more acceptable to ask for help. You know, being a human being is a difficult task. It's kind of an understatement, right?
That's a nice thing to hear, though.
And I think it should be normal for us to acknowledge that being human is difficult. Mm-hmm. And mostly healthy people at different points in their life have thoughts about their death.
I think that's so important for you to say. Say that again.
People who would be considered mostly healthy at different points in their life, different developmental stages or different crises, have thoughts of their own death. And I think it's important to give those people a place to explore that place in their mind.
Right.
Now, when that becomes an option, when we go from that being a place in our mind to that being an option, then the intervention is different.
Mm-hmm.
But if it's just a place or we're thinking about things, just like we think about finances, we think about relationships, we think about children in school and professional
things. Making it
kind
of normal.
Right.
And we know that there really is no such thing as normal. But that, like you say, that everybody has these thoughts at one time or another.
Right. Yeah. To make them acceptable. And especially what I found when someone's lost someone to suicide, at some point in their own processing of that, thoughts of their own death comes up. And I want to, you know, it's okay. And I don't overreact when I hear someone share those things because it's a place that needs to be honored in their mind.
Well, not only that, it's a place that you've been as well. I know that you're pretty comfortable in sharing this, and I appreciate this, that your mother had completed her suicide.
Right. And this November 25th will be 9 years.
Wow.
And I was just sitting thinking about that the other day, and it's one of those things that, for me in my own grief journey, it's not as present with me like it was the first month or the first day. But when these significant dates come around, I do sit back and I think, gee, what have I done with these past 9 years? And it's been really quite a privilege to be part of AFSP. It's a great time to be involved in Tampa Bay because we've gone from just having one walk and one survivor day to now we have three walks, Pasco, Pinellas, and Hillsboro. We have two international survivors of suicide loss programs in Tampa and Clearwater. We just completed several mental health first aid trainings, which I was very excited about because as a mental health professional, I can provide services to people who are struggling, but it's very unlikely that a mental health professional is going to be the first line of defense. It's usually going to be a friend or a family member who finds someone or someone shares an experience.
Right.
And so this training was meant to help people in the community say, this is how you interact. This is how you help someone in the moment who's thinking about suicide.
And who are the kind of people who are taking that kind of training?
We had, well, they're for lack of a better word, lay people. They're not mental health professionals.
Right.
They're moms and dads.
Are they involved in schools and things like that?
Some were involved in the schools. Some had kids in schools.
Right.
Right now, we're trying to work something out. One of the colleges, there's a student group, student organization who's interested in hosting this training. So we're trying to make that happen. And some were mental health professionals.
Because we are seeing a huge rise in student or children. I mean, I say children, but they're 17, 18 years old. They're not really kids anymore, committing suicide, a lot of bullying and some other things that are happening. Is that what statistics are playing out as well?
Well, statistics show us, and this stat's been pretty consistent, that the age group 45 to 64 is the highest statistically of suicides. And then 85 and above is our next group.
Oh, wow.
But suicide is the third leading cause of death for our teenagers.
Wow.
And depending on the year and depending on which research you look at, it's either one, two, or three based on the other two are accidents and homicides. So you think about those three.
Amazing. I wouldn't have thought homicide. But I have seen that talking to Grady Judd, the last couple of years and some other people that, more and more kids are not only doing this on their own, but creating these almost clubs around taking their lives is really a very shocking statistic.
A friend of mine who's in another chapter here in the state was part of helping discover a ring, if you will, of middle school students had all had a very elaborate plan of ending their life along the same period of time in their own homes. And unfortunately, the plan didn't come to light quick enough, and some young people died, but they were able to save several people. So there's a sense, teenagers like to be friends. They like their social groups are so important. And unfortunately, the goodness or badness, if you will, of those social groups often don't matter to a kid who just wants to fit in somewhere.
Wow.
And so when we think about stigmas and we think about hope, we want to be able to create an opportunity for young people to be in good, hope-filled social groups.
Right.
And so our walks are open to teenagers and children. My little girl is 5 years old, and every year comes around, Daddy, when's it time for the walk? She loves the walk.
Well, now, isn't that in October, the walks?
The walks, yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you for asking. We have three walks. I'm super excited. The St. Petersburg Walk is on October 24th in South Straub Park.
Okay.
The Pasco Walk, it's our first year in Pasco, is going to be on November the 7th at Starkey Park, and that's a beautiful place.
I have been up there camping with my horses in the past. It is gorgeous up there.
I got lost in there biking one day. It was fun because it's such a beautiful place.
Somebody will find you.
And then Tampa's going to be on December the 5th at the Downtown Tampa River Walk.
And that's another beautiful venue as well. You picked three great places.
I have got an incredible board, incredible group of volunteers. That's part of what makes my work so enjoyable. It's just knowing that each one of these people have been through their own losses.
Right.
And for each one of us, it wasn't okay. It wasn't acceptable to waste the experience. We're all committed to turning to our tragedies into triumphs.
Right. And to joy, from what I can see, just in your face. I mean, every time I see you and the further you go with this organization, it seems like you feel better, you get more excited.
I do. It's real. And it's kind of a contradiction, right? Because this is an incredible sadness.
Right.
And we all say, those of us who have grieved someone to suicide, we'd all trade in to have our loved one back. The membership into this club is exorbitant. But we don't get that option.
Right.
And I remember my first Survivor Day was sitting at home and it was being streamed online. I said, well, I'll just empty the dishwasher and play this in the background. And it took me an hour and a half to empty the dishwasher because I'd watch a little bit, put a few dishes away, and I'd cry. And that process carried on for a very long time. And there were a few things in that video I was very comfortable with and familiar with. I was familiar with the tears. I was familiar with the bitterness and the rage and the hurt. I was familiar with this, the own sense of hopelessness. How am I going to live my life without my mom?
Right.
But there were some things I was not familiar with, and they were small. And if you weren't watching closely, you would miss them. It was the smile of the people in the video.
Really?
It was the joke that somebody made, and then people laughed. And I said, I've got to figure that out. How does someone go from this to be able to laugh again? I've got to be able to make that connection. And so I became courageously curious enough and entered my own therapy and relied on my friends and my social supports. And it wasn't easy. In a short radio interview, it can make it sound like this is an easy process.
Sure.
And sometimes people come to me and say, Jason, I want to be where you are.
Right.
And I said, well, just make sure you don't leave where you are now too soon. And then you can get where you need to be.
Oh, awesome. Because I think people do think that you should have a certain amount of time to get over. There's a set period of time. And if you're not over it, if you haven't moved to a certain level of grief in that time, that somehow you're weak or you just don't want to get there. And that isn't the case.
Right. One of my first survivor groups that I attended as a survivor, I remember sitting there thinking, this isn't something you get over. This is, in my mind, the metaphor came up of like losing a limb. Like if I lost my arm, I will, lost my leg, I'm sorry. I will never walk again without my leg. It just won't happen. But that doesn't mean that I don't get to still have an enjoyable life and still have something to look forward to, that I still have something to wake up for every morning. So that's the same way with being a suicide survivor. My mom won't ever get to see my daughter. And my mother was a neonatal intensive care unit nurse, so she was supposed to be here and help me become a dad. But you know what? My daughter's still pretty darn awesome. And I still get to enjoy her.
Right.
And my life is still pretty good. So it doesn't get, it's not as, suicide loss isn't something we get over. It's something we have to go through.
Right.
And it's something that we, if we're paying attention and we're courageously curious enough, we can still find hope in our lives after a loss like this.
So you've been doing these walks for a while now. Do you do them for to raise money? I mean, is that part of it?
That is part of it. And it's, again, one of those interesting things. We're talking about raising money around such a delicate and sensitive issue. So for me personally, first and foremost, it's to break the stigma. It's to give people a venue to talk and share. I'll never forget one of my first walks, probably the second or third walk I did, I showed up and I overheard this lady saying that someone had died by suicide in her family the day before.
Oh, my
gosh. And she had just found out about this. And, you know, she was obviously not doing very well emotionally. No. She was struggling, but she was so thankful to be able to come out. And so that's when I think we have a successful walk.
Sure.
When we create a place for people to talk. On the other side of that, you know, we fund a tremendous amount of research. We have a lot of educational programs that are available right here in Tampa Bay to share. And all of that does take money.
Sure it does.
So this is a fundraiser. There's no minimum fundraising requirements. People just register easily online at outofthedarkness.org. And then they can share that on their websites and the social media sites to encourage their friends and family to donate.
I see. You're saying, from what I'm hearing, is that mostly you're trying to give a venue to the people who are considering this, have been through this, have had thoughts, have someone in their family. It's complete a suicide.
Thank you.
Taught me right. You taught me correctly. And the money's almost secondary, although you'd like to have it.
Well, AFSP nationally has set a tremendous goal of having a reduction in suicides by 20% by the year 2025.
And how much is that? I mean, how many people are we really talking about?
Well, the most recent year we have statistics for is 2013. There were 41,129 completed suicides that year.
Wow.
And
that's a staggering number of people who did not have to die.
Right.
It is a staggering number.
And this is kind of a political hot button, but it's part of the statistics. So there's 41,149 people who died by suicide. 21,175 of those were by firearms.
Oh, so the whole gun issue.
It's politically, it's very sensitive to kind of bring that up. And AFSP is working nationally to kind of partner with some of the large gun lobby groups to say, hey, we're not interested in taking guns away. We are interested in safe branding and safe messaging. You know, there's once again, it's in the news. There's a lot of stories going on about it. But there were 11,208 homicide deaths. There were 21,175 suicide deaths by firearms.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we'd like to do locally is be able to have our information, our flyers, our the crisis hotline number up in a gun shop or any place that sells guns or ammunition. It's just a place for people, because they're going into these places to buy their ammunition, whether it's for hunting or target practice or to end their life.
Right.
So it's important to be able to have the resources and information there at that place.
Because you really don't know. I mean, if you're if that's the way that people are completing their suicide, that you don't know. That could, if you hit one person who's coming in there for that reason and that doesn't happen, that's a complete success.
Right, right.
You know, is that how you guys look at it
exactly.
too?
Exactly. I want to be careful this, not to over-stigmatize it as well, that not everyone walking in to purchase a gun or ammunition or not even everyone who's got a mental health diagnosis is going to die by suicide. But I think more the more we can have conversations about this, the more that we can have the message out there, the more lives we'll be able to save.
So what are you finding in the people that are completing their suicide? Are these people who have tried before? Is it, are there very obvious signs that this is going to happen, or do you have statistics on that?
One of the things we know is that women attempt suicide far more often than men do. And their methods of attempting suicide are much different than men. Either poisoning of some sort, medication, or some other type of poison. Women, right.
Mm-hmm.
Hanging, suffocation of some sort is a common use. Men more typically will use a firearm.
Right.
And that is obviously much more lethal. And so that doesn't give an opportunity to have more than one attempt.
Right, right. We were talking about the thing with the kids. What are you finding out when you're doing some of this research? What are you finding out that kids are wanting to end their lives over? Are they different? Are they the same things that we've grown up in our whole not fitting in, you know, the generational things? Are there different things now?
Well, one of the things I remember about being a teenager is teenagers can be very impulsive, mm-hmm. and their brains aren't even fully developed until in their 20s. And so they have an urge, they have a thought, where we as healthy adults may be able to think things through or delay gratification. Teenagers often act very impulsively in many areas of their life.
Right.
So I think it becomes more difficult for them to slow their minds down and to realize that now is not forever.
Right. But are you, and you know where I'm going with this, is it TV? Is it the social media? Is it the access to the information that has changed? Like you say, is it just because now we have access to that and that it just feeds that impulsiveness, do you think?
Well, I certainly agree that the access to a wide variety of extreme material on the internet can have an impact on people.
Right. Anybody.
Anybody. I remember being a teenager and comparing the things that I saw online then to the things I hear people talking about now. It is unbelievable.
Yeah.
So I think it certainly has an impact, maybe puts ideas in people's minds that they had not thought about before. But again, the thing that we do know is that 90% of the people, kids, teenagers, and adults who die by suicide have a diagnosable mental illness at the time of their death. Hmm. So these other things may be catalysts to help a situation that's already unhealthy in somebody's mind.
Right.
But I think addressing the mental health needs, because there are a lot of people who see that stuff and then don't go
sure.
act on it.
Well, and that was my next question, that the people who have a mental health issue, and again, it's the stigma. I don't care how much we open this up. I think the younger you are and the less information you have and the less education that you have, the more that there is a stigma. I think it's the education and the information and the growth that makes a difference. And that plus that impulsiveness makes them a really sensitive group to all of this, these ideas, as you say, that I never heard of. And sometimes I see stuff on the internet and I'm like, I would have never thought about that.
Right.
I would have never been able on my own to have come up with something that sick, that depraved or whatever. And I wonder if them seeing that and that just doesn't have a huge effect.
Well, them seeing that is certainly going to have some sort of effect because then many times it draws them back. Some of the young people I work with, even in their young adult years, are drawn into these extreme websites. I think one of the other dangers here is if they don't have something to balance it out.
Mm-hmm.
Like if that becomes their social group, these sites, this material they're seeing, and they don't have a bonded, close family to come back to
right.
at the end of the day and say, hey, I saw this. Or if kids are getting into these things and parents don't know what's going mm-hmm. on, for lots of reasons, parents cannot know what's going on, not to blame the parents,
sure.
but it's so accessible. Here on my phone here, I
right.
can do that, and no one would ever know.
Right.
But I think if kids have a bonded, close someone in their life they can go back to and talk to these things about, then the impact, whatever it is, won't be as drastic.
Well, you were mentioning that you have a new group that's coming up in the school. Is this a peer associated group that's helping kids with suicides? You said you were trying to get in the beginning. You said something about you guys were going to do
the mental health first aid training. And I can't remember which school it is. I want to say it's USF. A student organization has asked us to come in and do that. We're still trying to work those details out. And we may or may not be able to get that in by a deadline that's coming up. But mm-hmm. mental health first aid is incredible because once again, it's going to be training the people who are going to be literally the first responders.
Right.
You know, first responders, we think of law enforcement and fire departments. They do tremendous work, but someone has to call them
right.
to bring them in. So
right.
it's, again, parents, spouses, boyfriends, girlfriends.
So anybody could really take this if they wanted
right,
to.
Right,
right.
I don't know the website, but anyone can Google mental health first aid and the website pops up and you can find trainings in your area.
Talk, just touch on all the things that are coming up. October, you've got 3 walks, and then November, you have this. Tell me what it's called.
So we have our Out of the Darkness community walks, one in October. That's okay. October 24th at South Straub Park in St. Petersburg. November the 7th is our first walk in Pasco County at Starkey Park. And then on December the 5th and downtown Tampa River Walk. Those are our 3 Out of the Darkness community walks. And then on November the 21st, the Saturday before Thanksgiving, we have the International Survivors of Suicide Loss Conference, which is going to be specifically designed for people who've lost someone to suicide. It is open to, and I'll let parents make their own decision, but mature teenagers
okay.
And adults. And anyone's actually welcome to come to the program. We just ask that only direct survivors of a suicide loss attend our individual breakout support groups.
Right. And this is not the first time you've done this, is it?
No, I think this is probably year five or six, and we've grown to have two locations. It's been incredible. And out of that, one of the things we realized is this is a great program. It works, but there's another population of people that we're missing, and that is a group of people who just yesterday or today or right now have had a suicide loss. Right. And so AFSP has something called the Survivor Outreach Program, which of all the things that are on my AFSP bucket list, this was the last one I hadn't been able to get to, and it's finally here.
Right.
So we have a group of trained volunteers who, if there's a suicide in the community, the family can call us and we can send a trained volunteer to their home. Not, you know, certainly someone needs to call 911 first and have that piece of it taken care of.
Sure.
We're not in the immediate crisis, but as the dust starts to settle and you start to wonder, what am I going to do now? How am I going to live my life without this person? These people are all survivors. Uh-huh. They've all been through training, and in some way or another, they've all been where you're at.
And how do we get in touch with them?
You can, I'm going to put all of this information, there's lots of websites and things, and to be efficient, I'm going to put all of this information on our Facebook page, and that's Facebook AFSP Tampa Bay.
Okay. And that'll have all the numbers, all the websites, all the information that we've talked about this morning.
And I'll pin it to the top, so it'll be the very first thing people see when they go to our Facebook page at AFSP Tampa Bay.
That sounds great. Jason Tompkins, again, been our guest this morning. It's always awesome to talk to you, and I am so happy about the growth of all of these walks that you're doing. And it really is, I think, a real testimony, a testament to your mother, that you have turned this into a joyous, if there is joy in this, into joy, at least for other people and helping other people out.
Thank you
That's
very much.
That's your gift. That's
tragedy
gift.
Into triumph. That's what our kind of personal board motto is, and I appreciate that.
I appreciate you, too. And we appreciate you listening to Sunday Morning. It's a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. If you have anything that you have a question about that you didn't get any of the websites for, please feel free to contact me at Mimi, M-I-M-I dot Lawson, L-A-W-S-O-N, at Cox, C-O-X-I-N-C, CoxInc.com. That's Mimi.Lawson. At CoxInc.com. Thank you again, Jason Tompkins, and thank you for joining us on Sunday Morning.
Thank you.